right, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast, NBA Podcast. My name is Keith, here, alone, without my buddies Chuck and John, doing the solo edition, a special interview with D-League expert Chris Reichert. The D-League just had their draft, and their season starts this week, so I thought it would be a good time for myself to find out just a little bit more about it, since honestly, I really don't know that much about it. This episode is for you big-time obsessive basketball NBA fans, which I assume are the people listening to this. Before I get to the guest, just want to let you know again about our buddies, the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast, an NBA podcast all about history of the league. Rich and Jason shine light on interesting stories and stats from the NBA's history, many of them that I'm completely unaware of. So make sure you subscribe and leave them a 5-star rating. The Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast, available on iTunes and Stitcher and over at The Step Back, where you can also find us. My guest today is an associate editor at The Step Back, where he also covers the D-League, Mr. Chris Reichert. How are you doing?
Keith, I'm good, man. How are you?
Oh, very, very good. It is our tradition to start with breakfast talk. Have you had breakfast today?
I did, yeah, man. Got to have breakfast.
All right. I like where you're coming from. What'd you have?
I don't usually have big breakfast because I get up pretty early. I usually get some writing in before my actual day job. So I had a Honeycrisp apple and a cup of coffee this morning. So not much, but I did have a breakfast.
What makes up a Honeycrisp apple?
Oh, man, a Honeycrisp apple is like, it's so good. I didn't know about it until I moved to the Pacific Northwest because they just don't have them everywhere. But we got a lot of different types of apples up here. And a Honeycrisp apple is just like it's kind of like a mix between a Red Delicious and like a Granny Smith. So you get some of the sweetness and tartness of the Granny Smith, but you still get like the great part of a Red Delicious. So it's like the perfect middleman between those two apples for me.
Okay, so I was thinking maybe it was like an apple that was prepared in some way, like covered in...
Oh, no, no.
Yeah, that's just the name.
It's a type of apple.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Don't know it. Of course, I'm not the most foremost fruit expert or anything. All right, well, Chris, have you on here to talk about kind of a deep nerd out for our hardcore basketball fans about the D-League. And I got to say, I'm kind of nervous about this interview because normally when I talk to people, I kind of know what we're talking about. But I really don't know very much about the D-League outside of their frequently asked questions section on the website. So as someone like myself, who's a huge NBA fan, watches tons of basketball, what should I know about the D-League and what am I missing by not paying attention?
I think the first thing is a lot of prospects are coming from the D-League right now. And it's just growing. You know, it's a growing entity right now for the NBA where they're really kind of morphing it into a true minor league. That's the goal. You know, right now there are 22 teams, so not every team has their own affiliate, but it's moving that way. So within the next probably 3 to 4 years, we should have every team with their own D-League team, at which point I think we'll see it really evolve into an actual minor league, maybe something along the lines of like a Major League Baseball system, except for we only have one team instead of, you know, a single A, double A, and triple A, mm-hmm. which wouldn't be viable, you know, for basketball. So that's the one. I mean, it's really growing. It's taking off. There's 3 new teams this year. So that's fun and exciting. We're seeing more and more names kind of pop up. Guys like Jonathan Simmons from the Spurs. I think everybody knows Hassan Whiteside from Miami. He came from the D-League. So you get these stories of guys who, you know, who prosper and they come out of nowhere kind of, and it's just a cool league to watch.
Yep. So you were saying in 3 to 4 years, you think there's going to be, you know, like a 1-to-1 ratio of D-League teams to NBA clubs, so everyone has their own specific minor league or affiliate. What is the process? Because the D-League is owned and subsidized by the NBA, right?
Yeah, so not all the teams are completely owned by their NBA affiliate, though. So some of them, like, do their own operations because they were all standalone teams at one point. So some of them do their own like business operations and then the NBA handles like the personnel and some of that's vice versa. Like the NBA will handle the business operations and let everybody, you know, at their location to handle the personnel. So there's a mix on some of them, but all the new affiliates that are coming in fully owned and operated by their MBA club because they want that autonomy moving forward.
Yeah, that's the confusing thing for me to try to wrap my head around, because it doesn't, in my mind, as a standalone entity, a D-League team wouldn't really be profitable, but because of the relationship with the NBA, you know, that they're subsidizing, they're paying the salaries. So when they expand, is it just the NBA? Are they trying to find investors to create franchises, or is it just a matter of those parent clubs, like whoever NBA team doesn't already have a team, picking where they want to set up their new team?
Yeah, it's the latter. It's the NBA clubs are looking for locations that they think are viable. Most of them are close, or at least decently close in proximity to their current home, you know, for their NBA club. So it's easy to move guys to and from their affiliate. And you're seeing about an estimated cost, you know, to start this up around like $7 or $8 million is what's being reported to start up your own D-League franchise. And really the process is they go out, they get cities that bid for this D-League team. Right now it's happening with Orlando. Orlando has an affiliate in Erie, but that's obviously not close to, you know, that's the Northeast and Orlando's down in the Southeast. So they want a team closer. So they're either going to have a team next season in Kissimmee or Lakeland. And at the beginning they had six different cities, you know, submitting bids and trying to win this affiliate. You know, and now they're said to make a decision here in the next 30 days on where they're going to go. So yeah, it's the NBA club. They're trying to find a place for it. And then these new clubs, like I said, they're all going to be owned and fully operated by the NBA teams. And I think they all will be, you know, at some point, especially when we hit the 30 mark.
Yeah. I noticed actually looking at the D-League map of where the franchises are, there's no teams in the South. Is that right? Like there's nothing in the Southeast.
Yeah. Which is kind of funny because when the league started in 2001, that's where all the teams were in the Southeast and the South, over in the South Southern area. So it's kind of going back, you know, history is repeating itself. It's going to revert back. You'll probably see Atlanta pop up a team in the South, Orlando. We could have Miami move their team closer because their team right now is in Sioux Falls. So that's obviously not very close in proximity either. So we'll see some movement and there'll definitely be some teams added to that area, but it is kind of funny that there's no teams there currently.
Yeah, I would like to see, I'm a Grizzlies fan, but I live in Nashville. I know the Iowa Energy seem to be doing good things and that relationship is really strong, but man, I wouldn't mind if we had a D-League team in Nashville, you know, for something to get involved. So the rules with the affiliate teams, and you have NBA teams, you know, when they're cutting down their training camp rosters, they can send their players to the D-League after they waive them as affiliate players. I don't really understand that relationship in the fact that the D-League's own website says affiliate players, like they remain free agents for all 30 NBA teams, but it's a quote vote of confidence for prospects, end quote. That seems kind of like it's not really anything. So can you tell me what the affiliate, being an affiliate player means?
Yeah, it's kind of like the D-League right now is kind of like the Wild Wild West, man. All these guys are basically free agents in terms of NBA clubs. So you're not seeing I don't think you're seeing the full amount of development that we're going to see when we hit the 30 team mark. Because at that point, I think what's going to happen is the NBA clubs will also own the player rights of the players in their affiliate, which just makes sense. It limits the player opportunities. However, you know, right now they have 30 teams that they can go to. If we switch to that model, they're only going to have one. So that's kind of the trade-off. With that, the salaries will likely go up to help subsidize that opportunity or the lost opportunity. So right now as an affiliate player, what the benefit is the NBA team can make sure they play with their affiliate, basically. So if they don't have their own affiliate, let's say the Denver Nuggets cut somebody and Nate Walters, for example, who was in camp with them and was cut, he subsequently signed overseas. But let's say they wanted to send him to the D-League. He would have to go through the D-League draft, and then any team could take him because they don't have their own affiliate. So Memphis gets to cut people and send them to Iowa, and they get to keep a closer eye on them. Their coaches are there. They're running their schemes. So they're likely a better fit for Memphis's system, even though any NBA team right now can sign them.
Yeah, that makes sense. It seems pretty weak. The whole, you can be ours, and that's our vote of confidence. It's similar to like businesses telling a band, we want to use your music, but we're not going to pay you, but we'll give you exposure. type of thing. But
right, exactly. Oh, and well, how the NBA teams do that is they'll give them a partial guarantee to help offset that low D-League salary. Right now, the D-League salaries are, they range from $19,500 to only $26,000. So these top affiliate players, the majority of them went to camp and they got anywhere from $25,000 all the way up to $250,000 in partial guarantees at camp. And that's part of that kind of unwritten handshake agreement that they have with the NBA club. Yeah, I'll agree to go to your D-League affiliate if you pay me $100,000 to come to camp. If I get waived, at least I have $100,000 in my pocket.
Right. And I would be remiss talking about not paying bands. Another shout out to my friend Codaphonic for giving us all his music for free to use on our podcast. Speaking of those unwritten agreements, so like you say, that's kind of an unwritten agreement. Like, you know, we'll give you guaranteed money and training camp deal, even when we waive you. So we've seen a couple of these things. And again, an example with the Memphis Grizzlies, where a team will draft a player in the second round. They won't give him an NBA contract, but they send him to the D-League. And it's kind of like a domestic draft and stash. So we saw that with Andrew Harrison. And he played a year in Iowa, and then this season he signed a guaranteed deal. Now, I can't figure out, is this a written agreement? Is this a legal agreement? Or is this kind of like a understood handshake? Like, hey, if you do a year in Iowa making $20,000, then we will pay you a guaranteed NBA salary the following year. So is that like above board, or is that just something that happens?
It's not in their contract. So, I mean, because like you said, they're not signing anything. So Harrison never actually signed with the Grizzlies. They just held his draft rights. And what teams are doing late in the second round is they're contacting these agents for these players and saying, hey, we want to take your guy, but we're only going to take him if you agree to put him in the D-League for at least 1 year while we hold his draft rights. So he can develop. We want him to develop, but we don't want to lose his rights by waiving him as an affiliate player. So they do that so they can hold on to him for a year. So nobody could call up Harrison last year except for Memphis because he was a draft rights player. So those are the only protected players in the D-League right now. And there was no guarantee that Harrison would make Memphis this year along with doing that. So a perfect example of that is a couple of years ago, Oklahoma City and Samaj Christian out of Xavier. He was a draft rights player for 1 year. The next year, they still didn't invite him to camp. So he didn't even have a chance to make the roster, but they still held his rights. He went over and played in Italy. And now this season they called him, he went to camp and he subsequently made the roster. So it took him 2 years of them holding his rights to actually make the Oklahoma City roster. But you're seeing it more and more. There are five draft rights players right now in D-League training camps. So it's not super widespread, but it's happening.
That's really interesting about Samaj Christian, because I didn't know he was a preview. I didn't know he was a D-League player for the Thunder, because it was pretty much in a vacuum looking at this year's training camp for the Thunder. It was surprising that they kept Christian because they waived Ronnie Price's guaranteed money, and it was a lot of it. And they also waived Mitch McGarry, who had guaranteed money. So, like, I wonder if that was maintaining that agent relationship, or that we took you 2 years ago, we had you play in the D-League, and so now we're going to make good on that.
Yeah, it definitely could have been. I know that he had a partial guarantee of like $200,000, which is pretty high. So even if they did waive him, he was getting a good chunk of money, you know, to stick around and likely play with the D-League again. But they wouldn't have held any kind of rights for him if they cut him out of camp. So, it could have been kind of keeping that relationship. And it could have been, hey, Samaj Christian as a 24, 25-year-old probably has more upside than Ronnie Price right now. Let's go ahead and keep him on the roster, you know, as we kind of – they're not rebuilding, but as they retool a little bit, you know, considering their hectic offseason.
Yeah, that makes sense. It still seems strange to me that it isn't officially codified in some sense that we're going to take care of a player, because the whole thing of, as you've mentioned, the salaries are so low, like $19,000, you know, where it's telling a guy, hey, don't make money for a year. And then next year, you know, you might get that NBA minimum. And another example with still the Thunder is where Josh Huestis was drafted in the first round. And then they said, hey, pass up this guaranteed first round draft pick money to go play in the D League. And so my question in regards to him was, like, do we know that the Thunder maybe took out an insurance policy on their own dime on him? Cause like, if he got hurt, it's like he gave up, I don't know what it would be. He gave up like $5 million.
Yeah, and I'm not, just to be honest, I'm not aware, you know, of what they did in that situation. I know that was a weird situation, and it was kind of, you know, they're the only ones who have done that with a first round draft pick.
Yeah.
And it ultimately gave them a lot of salary cap flexibility as well, because they didn't have to pay that rookie salary that year, and it didn't go against their cap. So it's, you know, it was a weird situation, but he ultimately made the roster as well the following year. So, not all guys do, and it's not, like I said, nothing's guaranteed. It's almost like, you know, these international drafts and stashes. There's a lot of teams who own draft rights of players who never end up playing in the NBA, unfortunately, because they just don't choose to come over, or their stars overseas. It's a little different because they're probably making a much better wage, you know, than what these D-League guys are getting. But Harrison, in particular, I think really, really benefited from that year in the D-League. He improved leaps and bounds from his time at Kentucky. And it's not really a knock on Calipari and Kentucky staff, but I mean, he had a lot of work to do, even though he's very skilled and very talented as a player. I mean, just foundational things, footwork, defensive awareness, how to play in the pick and roll. I mean, that year in the D League was really beneficial for him. And I don't think there's any way he's on the roster right now if he didn't spend that year there and getting that live game action and really improving.
Yep. That makes sense. So, in the new CBA that's coming out, it's pretty much been leaked or already reported that they're going to start having two-way contracts between NBA teams and their affiliate D-League teams. And perhaps that'll get rid of some of this gray area of sending a guy down and is there an agreement we're going to bring him back up. So can you explain to us kind of what that two-way contract is going to look like?
Yeah, I think it's really beneficial for players. You know, it gives potentially what 60 additional roster spots if they extend the roster to 17 players. And what it's going to do is it's going to hedge, like you said, hedge those draft rights players, because a guy like Harrison last year, if they had the two-way contract, they probably keep him on, and he won't make NBA minimum. According to these reports, he'll make somewhere in between kind of what D-League offers an NBA minimum. I would probably say around 300 grand, considering NBA minimum's what, like 580 now or 550. So he's going to make somewhere in between there. They're going to make more money. They're going to be with the NBA club, but they can also go be sent down to the D League and still get live game action. And the NBA club has no worry of losing that player, you know, by putting them in the D League. So they can put them down there. They can still make better wages. They can work on things they need to work on so that eventually they can hopefully get into the rotation, whether that's that same year or, you know, later down the road. And then it gives the teams flexibility if they have injuries. So we'll probably see less of the, I forget what it's called right now, but you know, when the teams has a lot of guys injured, they get that extra roster spot. They have to like submit it to the NBA to get the extra spot.
Yeah. Injury exceptions, Grizzlies fans. We know all about it from last year.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would assume this would help kind of shed that as well, because you're going to have two extra guys who can play, you know, that will be on your roster and be able to put in. So there's a lot of benefits, you know, I don't really see too many downsides to it, to be honest, other than NBA teams and owners having to pay a little bit more money. But I mean, there's plenty of that to go around, especially if they're only paying, you know, somewhere from $200,000 to $400,000 for these players.
The downside I see about it is, as you mentioned earlier, is the opportunity for players. Like, it seems like you get locked into one team. And an example of this that I think of, again, I mean, I guess our listeners know I always talk about the Grizzlies, but this is a true good example, because it talks about one of the biggest guys who came out of the D-League, Hassan Whiteside. So Hassan Whiteside was in training camp with the Memphis Grizzlies, and the Grizzlies already had Mark Gasol and Kostas Koufos, and we're just like, you know what, we can't keep this guy. There's no reason. So my concern is, if the Grizzlies had 17 roster spots in these two-way contracts, they're like, let's just keep Hassan Whiteside in Iowa. And my wonder is, does he stay stuck in Iowa and never get this opportunity? It seems like for a player, it's better to be, I have the freedom, where teams have to make really tough roster trim down decisions to get down to 15 roster spots. Now these extra guys that are cut, they can go sign anywhere and they have more opportunity.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, I definitely want to see as much player opportunity as possible. And I think ultimately the player and their agent would have to agree to taking one of those last two spots. So it's kind of a, do I want to go down to the D League and bet on myself and take 26 grand for a couple of weeks and hope that another team calls me up? Or do I want to maybe, you know, hedge my bets a little bit and take a little bit more money for this 1 year? I would assume they're going to be year by year deals, because they're, you know, they're two-way contracts. So all the deals in the D League are only 1 year. So I would assume if it's attached to the D League, it's also going to be this 1 year deal. So maybe they take it for 1 year and then they decide, you know what, I'm not going to get the opportunity I thought I was. So I won't do it again this following year unless they sign me to their 15 man roster, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, limiting player opportunities, it kind of stinks. Obviously we want the players to get those opportunities, and we might not have Whiteside getting $100 million deals if we had that in place. So that's a great point.
Yeah, and I wonder if even the Players Association looks at it as the positive of there being 60 more lucrative jobs is a greater benefit than the one guy, you know, hitting the lottery, you know, winning the $100 million, getting the $100 million contract. So yeah, there definitely is some trade-off there. I'm curious, as far as the actual D-League gameplay, are teams like ultra competitive, or is it more of a sense of like, I know that players are, and coaches are trying to win, but is it more of that developmental, like, let's just work on stuff, let's do stuff? Or is it still cutthroat, like, I'm going to do whatever I can to win each and every game?
Well, I can tell you, from talking to the coaching staffs, they all want to win. You know, they want to win because the coaches are auditioning just like the players are. So they want to show that they can put in the schemes that they need to put in. They want to show they can make late game situational decisions to win games. So they're definitely trying to win. They're just trying to mix in the development piece. And I think the development piece a lot of times is from assignees that come down from the NBA. So if, you know, last year Damian Inglis was on the Bucks, if he gets sent down to the D League, maybe they're sending him down to work on specifically pull-up jumpers in transition. So maybe he won't be super effective while he's down there because he's not great at those yet, but he'll be working on that. So it's kind of a way of the good with the bad when those players come down and you get kind of a mixed feeling as far as like, do the coaches play these guys and let them do what they're working on, or do they try to win the game? They got to kind of balance that and do both a little bit.
Yeah, I wonder, when it comes to guys coming down, like, is there any history or situation where when it gets close to the playoffs that a team like the Bucks is like, you know what, we're not really using Damian Inglis, why don't you go help our D-League team win the playoff game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 2 years ago, the Santa Cruz Warriors won the D-League title the same year the Golden State Warriors did. James Michael McAdoo and Ogden Kuzmic weren't getting any time for the Warriors. They both played through that whole title run and helped Santa Cruz win the D-League title.
Nice.
So
yeah.
It happens. Yeah, it definitely happens, and it's kind of a sore spot with players who are already on the roster and with some of the media around. I mean, there's not many media covering the D-League, but myself, Adam Johnson, Dakota Schmidt over at Ridiculous Upside, like, I don't think it's a great practice, but teams do it. I mean, and it's their affiliate, so they can use it however they want.
Yeah, I'm so competitive as a person. I feel like if I was coaching a D-League team, I would definitely maybe call up my parent club to be like, hey, who aren't you using, or who can I have for a couple? For give me a ringer. Like, I want a ringer. I want to win. I want to add this to my resume.
Yeah, the issue is chemistry on those. So I mean, you don't want to get somebody who hasn't been there all season either, because your team's good enough to be in the finals as it is, or in the playoffs as it is. Only 8 teams out of the 22 make the playoffs, so it's not half like in the NBA. So it's a little bit tightened up there. So you don't want to hurt your chemistry either. But definitely getting somebody who's uber talented, and especially a post player who's very talented, is super helpful in D-League, because it's a very guard heavy, wing heavy league.
Yeah, I saw Jarnell Stokes tore it up last year in the I guess in the finals, and wasn't he, I think he was the regular season MVP as well.
Yeah, he dominated after he got waived by Miami and came down to Sioux Falls. They Sioux Falls had a loaded roster. I mean, they had Rodney Magruder, who's now with the Heat.
Yeah,
as a great 3-and-D guy. They had DeAndre Liggins, who's now with the Cavaliers. They had Briante Weber, who was in the Heat's camp. And they had a really, really stacked team there. They had Trey Murray, who played with the Timberwolves camp. So they had a really good roster for D-League-wise.
Yeah, so there's some rule differences as far as the gameplay. I know there's the advance rule, which is like, you know, the last 2 minutes of the game, instead of actually having a timeout to advance, they can just advance, you know, without wasting the time of the timeout. But there's also, I read there's a coach's challenge. Is that right? And what can you tell me about it?
Yeah, there's a coach's challenge. They implemented it 2 years ago. And 2 years ago, you could challenge any time during the game. If you got it right, you got one more challenge. If you got it wrong, you didn't have any more. Last year, they limited it to the fourth quarter. So you couldn't challenge a call early in the game, but you could in the fourth quarter. And it's interesting, man. It's an interesting dynamic to watch because the players, you know how players are. They're going to pine for that. They're going to say, no, I didn't foul him. And you could pretty much, you can challenge a lot of things. You can't challenge like a travel call or anything, but you can travel or you can challenge whether a foul was committed. So that's usually where it comes into, where a guy says, no, I didn't touch him. I didn't foul him. And so the coach has to decide, you know, do I want to trust my player and challenge this or not? So it's an interesting dynamic. And the camera angles aren't as great as the NBA, as you can imagine. They don't have the same technology or anything. So sometimes it might look like it's not there, but if it's not conclusive, they don't win that challenge either. So it's kind of it's fun to see. I don't know how great it is in practice. I've asked for some of the numbers to see how effective it's been as far as how many the coaches have gotten right. I haven't gotten that from the league, but that would be interesting for me to see.
Yeah, to me, it seems like a foul call, we like to pretend they're objective, but I think it's a totally subjective play. Like, so have you seen where there's like, there is physical contact and no fouls called and the refs are still like, no, like we're not going to call foul? Or is it a thing where once you go to a replay, it feels like you have to go letter of the law and say, was that contact? I guess determining whether contact's incidental, I guess is what I'm saying, seems really hard to do on replay and in slow-mo.
Yeah, and unfortunately, like when they're reviewing it, we're not getting the benefit of a replay in most cases. You're watching these games on YouTube, you know, so they give you like a stats demographic while they're doing the replay. So you don't get the benefit of seeing kind of what they're seeing and how they're making their decision. So I've seen it happen both ways where I thought there was contact and then they did change it to say, yeah, there's a foul. And I've seen it before where I said, there's definitely contact and they haven't changed it to call it a foul. So I've seen it go both ways. So like you said, I think they look at it still a little bit with some subjectivity when they're reviewing these things.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. I kind of hate reviews. I hate like the last 2 minute report. So personally, I hope this never trickles its way into the NBA. But are there any other rules that I know the D League does, the international goaltending where you can knock the ball once it hits the rim off? Are there any rules that they're using now that you would like to see implemented in the NBA?
They got rid of the FIBA rule, the goaltending rule. I wish they would have kept it. I actually really like that rule, but it's a tough habit, I think, for guys to get in. You didn't see it a lot because these guys are, most of them are American players who aren't used to that rule. So they ended up getting rid of it, which kind of stunk because I thought maybe as long as it's in the D League, there's a chance it's going to go to the NBA. But if they don't even have it in the D League, you know, you're likely not going to see it in the NBA. So, those are the two main ones. I think there's one that's escaping me, but it's not like a huge difference from the NBA. So those are the two main ones that we see.
All right. Well, to wrap up, what else do I need to know about the D League? And if I was so inclined, how would I get involved with following it and watching it?
Watching it is so easy, and it's great because they play all the games live on YouTube and they archive all the games on YouTube. So you don't have to watch them live. You can watch them really whenever you like, which is great for a blogger like me who wants to look at highlights and things like that, because I can kind of do it on my own time if I can't watch the game live. So they do all their games on YouTube around the showcase, which is in January. And then at playoff time in March, they'll play games on ESPN, which is great. It's usually ESPN2 or ESPN News. So I would say first, if you want to watch it, go to YouTube. If you want to follow it, shameless plug, follow me on Twitter at Chris_Riker. Follow D League Digest on Twitter. Follow Ridiculous Upside on Twitter. Again, there's really not too many outlets that are covering it exclusively. I mean, some people write about the big stories like Jimmer Fredette, and this year probably Jordan Crawford, and you know, the big name players, but very few of us are covering everybody and all the teams. So it's kind of limited in that sense, but it's an exciting time. And like I said, it's growing. We've got three new teams this year, the Windy City Bulls for Chicago, the Long Island Nets for Brooklyn, and then the Greensboro Swarm for Charlotte are all brand new. Salt Lake City is Utah's affiliate. They just moved from Idaho to Salt Lake City this year. And then the Northern Arizona Suns moved from Bakersfield to Northern Arizona to Prescott Valley for Phoenix's affiliate. So lots of movement, lots of changes. Lots of talent. I mean, there's tons of talent down there. It's just a matter of them getting an opportunity, really. So it's a fun thing to cover. And if you want to hear see guys from like a lot of mid majors and guys like Thomas Walkup, who became a star last year in March for in college. People like that, man, it's a fun thing to watch.
That sounds good. I'm definitely, it's hard for me to get more basketball than the NBA already has, but I definitely, man, like I will watch some EuroLeague. Like I watched all the summer league, obviously. And then like, you know, I even watch the tournament sometimes, but I got to admit, I haven't gotten much into the D League, but I definitely hope to change that. And I will do that with those resources you mentioned. So yeah, you guys definitely follow all those things that he said. Follow Chris on Twitter and he'll give you all that D League news. Any last words or anything you want to plug?
Just check out the Step Back, guys. I mean, we just launched it. Keith knows, like about a week and a half ago. Got a lot of amazing writers over there. We're covering any kind of basketball you could hope for. International, the D-League, college prospects, already looking at next year's draft. Of course, NBA coverage, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant feud, all of it. So check it out. Fun stuff.
That's perfect. And yes, our listeners should know, as we've told you, we can be found on Fansided's The Step Back. Well, hey, Chris, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate you coming on. Hope to talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, Keith. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Thanks to Chris for spending some time talking with me about the D-League. John and Chuck, my co-hosts, will be back later this week, and we will have an action-packed episode for you. Patreon folks, those of you in the Fantasy League, I will see you at the draft on Monday night. And on Tuesday, I'll be posting my personal NBA power rankings exclusively there on Patreon. And if you guys like our podcast and you aren't a Patreon supporter, maybe consider going to patreon.com/fastbreakbreakfast and checking it out and seeing if you want to offer us some financial support for what we're doing here. All right, follow us on Twitter @fastbreakbreak. Like us on Facebook. Please tell your friends and people on Twitter and Reddit and anywhere people are talking about podcasts about us. We appreciate the support you guys have given us so far. So thanks for listening. You guys are the best. And remember, breakfast is the most important thing.